A visitor stands on the main sidewalk of Rivertown, handing out leaflets, urging the mill workers to organize. Company guards order her off, and when she refuses, they have her removed. Rivertown is owned end-to-end by a single private company. It lays the streets, runs the police, operates the shops. Does the First Amendment protect her? Yes. Now move her to a shopping mall in Olympia. Same leaflets, same removal, and the answer flips to no. Nothing about her changed. Everything about who owned the pavement did. That gate is called state action, and it stands in front of every constitutional rights claim you will ever make. Here is the route. Part 1. The state action gate, the core rule, then the two ways a private party becomes the government, exclusive public function and entanglement. Part 2. Procedural due process. Whether a protected interest is at stake, how much process is due, and when the hearing has to happen. Then the corners the exam likes. Start with the shape of the Constitution. It is mostly a leash on the government, not on your neighbor. Almost every individual right in the Bill of Rights and the 14th Amendment restrains what the government may do to you. It says nothing about what a private person or company may do. So before you argue that your speech, your equal protection, or your due process was violated, you have to show the government did it, federal, state, or local. Government employees and agencies acting in their official roles are automatically state actors. That part is easy. One outlier. The 13th Amendment bans slavery and involuntary servitude, and it applies directly to private conduct. Under its Section 2 enforcement power, Congress may also reach the private badges and incidents of slavery. Every other individual rights provision needs state action. The hard cases are a private party doing something that looks governmental. Route 1 is the exclusive public function test. A private party becomes a state actor when it performs a function traditionally and exclusively reserved to the government. The key word is exclusively. Not one the government also does. One only the sovereign has ever performed. Two classics are in. Running an election, including a political party's primary, when that primary effectively picks the office holder. And operating a full company town that provides all the ordinary municipal services. Streets, sewers, police, the works. Which is why the leafleter wins in Rivertown. The company performs the full range of municipal functions, so it stands in the shoes of a city and is bound by the First Amendment. The mall is not. Running a shopping center, even a large one, open to the public, is not an exclusively governmental function. Try one. A private operator runs a public access cable channel and drops a program it dislikes. Exclusive public function? No, said the Supreme Court as recently as 2019, so the operator was free to drop it. Same answer for a utility, even a monopoly, and for a school that takes government funding. Route 2. Entanglement, also called significant involvement. Even when the function is not governmental, conduct becomes state action if the government is so entangled with it that the choice is fairly the government's own. There is no single formula. Courts ask how deeply the state is involved. Four patterns. First, compulsion or encouragement. The state commands, compels, or significantly encourages the private conduct. Mere permission or acquiescence is not enough. Letting a private party do as it likes is not commanding it. Second, a symbiotic relationship or joint action. The state and the private party are interdependent partners in a shared venture, and both profit. The classic is a coffee shop leasing the ground floor of a public parking garage. The rent finances the garage, the parkers keep the shop profitable. That shop's refusal to serve a customer is state action. Third, entwinement. A nominally private body so interwoven with public institutions and officials that it is effectively public. Think of an athletic association made up almost entirely of public schools and run largely by public officials. Fourth, state enforcement. And here is one to test yourself on. Homeowners are bound by a recorded covenant barring any sale to a non-white buyer. An owner sells anyway, and a neighbor sues to enforce it. Private agreement, so no constitutional problem? No. A court putting its coercive power behind it is state action. 1. Modern application. A government official uses a personal social media account and blocks a critic. State action? Under a test the Supreme Court set in 2024, only if two things are both true. The official actually had authority to speak for the government on that subject and was purporting to use it in the posts at issue. A mayor announcing city policy and deleting critics is acting for the state. The same mayor posting vacation photos and blocking a rude relative is not. Judged post by post, not by job title. Clear that gate, and a second guarantee opens up. Procedural due process. The Fifth Amendment binds the federal government, and the 14th binds the states, and neither may deprive a person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Note what this is not. It is not about whether the decision was right or the law wise. That is substantive due process. This one asks only about fairness of process. Did you get notice and a real chance to tell your side to a neutral decision maker? The analysis is always two steps. 1. Is a protected life, liberty, or property interest at stake? If not, no process is owed at all. 2. If one is, how much process is due? Meet our second person. A single parent receives a monthly subsistence grant. The statute says the agency shall pay benefits to everyone meeting the income limits and shall not terminate except for cause. A caseworker cancels her benefits on an anonymous tip, with no notice and no chance to respond. Does she have property? Yes. Property here is broader than land and money. You have a property interest when you have a legitimate claim of entitlement to a benefit. Not a wish, not a one-sided expectation, but an entitlement grounded in a statute, a contract, or established rules. Shall pay, except for cause, is exactly that language. Compare a small business grant awarded in the agency's sole discretion with no criteria guaranteeing anyone an award. That applicant has a hope. A hope is not property, so no process is owed. Test it. A city fires two records clerks on the same day, with no notice and no chance to respond. One works under a policy saying she may be discharged only for cause. The other was hired expressly at will. Which one was owed process? The for-cause clerk. At-will status is the very thing that negates an entitlement, other protected property, benefits you already receive, a public school student's enrollment, a license you already hold, continued municipal utility service. And note where the entitlement comes from: state law, a contract, or an agency's own rules. The Constitution protects an entitlement that exists. It does not create one. Liberty covers more than staying out of jail. Freedom from physical restraint and unjustified punishment. Involuntary commitment to a mental institution. A parent's interest in the care and custody of a child. Core personal freedoms. And here is an exam favorite: reputation plus. Government damage to your reputation, by itself, is not a loss of liberty. A blacklist with no lost right or status is a tort question. But reputational harm plus the loss of a tangible right, being fired and publicly branded, or losing a license does trigger due process. One more threshold point. A deprivation needs a deliberate act. Mere negligence is not a due process deprivation at all. A guard who carelessly leaves an object on the stairs and causes a fall has committed a tort, not a constitutional violation. Step 2. How much process? Due process is flexible. It calls for whatever procedures the situation fairly demands, and courts decide by weighing three factors. Recite these cold. 1. The private interest at stake. How badly does an erroneous decision hurt this person? 2. The risk of an erroneous deprivation under the current procedures and the likely value of extra safeguards. Would more process actually catch mistakes? 3. The government's interest, including the fiscal and administrative burden more process would impose. Weigh them. The greater the private stake and the risk of error, the more process is due. The heavier the government's burden, the less. Whatever the balance produces, two ingredients are almost always required: adequate notice and an opportunity to be heard. Notice must be reasonably calculated to actually reach the person and let them object, usually by mail or personal delivery.
And if a mailed notice comes back undelivered, the government must take additional reasonable steps when it practically can. The hearing must be a meaningful opportunity to be heard at a meaningful time before a neutral decision maker. Now, the biggest timing question, and another exam favorite, must the hearing come before the deprivation, or is a prompt hearing after it enough? The answer turns on the same three factors. The classic contrast is welfare versus disability. Welfare benefits go to people living at the edge of subsistence, so cutting them off is devastating and an error is intolerable. The government must give an evidentiary hearing before terminating them, a chance to appear, present evidence, confront the case against you. Not a trial, but a real hearing first. Disability is different. Those benefits are not based on financial need, and the key question is medical, decided largely on written records. So, a full pre-termination hearing is not required. Written submissions before the cutoff, plus a hearing afterward, satisfy due process, which puts our single parent squarely on the welfare side of the line. Her grant is need-based subsistence support, so the balance likely required an evidentiary hearing before the agency cut her off. An anonymous tip and a canceled payment will not do. Two more timing rules. In a genuine emergency or where the government's need is strong, a prompt hearing afterward may suffice. And to fire a for-cause public employee, notice and a chance to respond first, a fuller hearing later. Now the corners the exam likes. First, waiver. Process can be waived, but only voluntarily, knowingly, and intelligently. The example is a cognovit note, where a borrower agrees in advance that on default, the lender may take judgment with no hearing. Not automatically unconstitutional. Enforceable only if the borrower gave the write-up knowingly, between parties of roughly comparable bargaining power. Second, access to courts. When a fee blocks an indigent person from the only avenue to a truly fundamental interest, due process and equal protection forbid shutting the poor out. Filing fees must be waived for a divorce, because only a court can dissolve a marriage. But there is no general right to free court access. Third, creditors' remedies. When a creditor uses government machinery to seize property before winning the case, that is state action, and a seizure with no notice and no hearing generally violates due process. It survives when safeguards cut the risk of a wrongful grab. A neutral judge, not a clerk, issues the order. The creditor swears to specific facts and posts a bond. The debtor gets a prompt post-seizure hearing. and wages get extra protection because a paycheck is subsistence. Garnishing them without prior notice and a hearing is generally unconstitutional. Fourth, civil forfeiture. The owner gets notice and a timely hearing. But in 2024, the Supreme Court held that due process does not require a separate, earlier preliminary hearing just to decide whether police may keep the property meanwhile. Fifth, agencies, where most of these disputes actually happen. The floor is the same. Notice, a meaningful chance to respond, a neutral decision maker. It need not be a full trial with live witnesses. Sometimes written submissions are enough. But neutrality never bends. A decider with a direct financial stake is out. A word on authorities. This episode named no cases, and that was deliberate. The exam gives you a fact pattern and asks what result the rule produces. It will not ask you for case names. Your authorities here are the due process clauses of the 5th and 14th Amendments and the 13th Amendment as the one provision that reaches private conduct. If you keep only three things, keep these. Exclusively, the word inside the public function test, because it decides most state action questions. Entitlement, not expectation, because it decides whether any process is owed at all. And the three factors, because they decide how much and when. Now the traps, straight from the examiner's favorites. 1. Heavy government funding, licensing, or regulation almost never equals state action by itself. 2. The public function exception covers only functions that are exclusively the government's. Utilities, schools, and shopping centers do not qualify, no matter how public they feel.
3.
The 13th Amendment is the only individual rights provision that reaches purely private conduct. So do not aim the 1st or the 14th at a private party. And a private party can violate a statute without violating the Constitution. Keep those claims separate. 4. Substantive versus procedural. If the question is whether the government may regulate a right at all, that is substantive due process, not this topic. 5. Property means a legitimate entitlement, not a wish. 6. Negligence is not a deprivation. You need a deliberate government act. 7. Reputation alone is not liberty. You need reputation plus. And 8. The one people forget. The remedy for a procedural violation is more process, a hearing, not automatically getting the benefit back. After a fair hearing, the person may still lose. Time for the quick check, and this one comes straight from the Bargo Question Bank. A privately owned electric utility serves a city under an exclusive franchise and a government-granted monopoly. A state commission closely regulates it and must approve its rates and rules. Acting under a tariff the commission approved, the utility shuts off a customer's power for non-payment, with no notice and no hearing. He sues, arguing the cutoff denied him procedural due process because the utility is really an arm of the state. Why does his claim most likely fail? Option 1. Supplying electricity is not a function reserved exclusively to the government. Option 2. He already received every bit of process a private utility must provide. Option 3. Continued electric service can never be a protected property interest. Pause here if you want a moment. The answer is option 1. Supplying electricity has never belonged exclusively to the sovereign. So, a regulated monopoly utility is not a state actor, and the claim dies at the gate. Heavy regulation, a franchise, and even a monopoly do not by themselves convert a private business into the government. Option 2 misframes the case. With no state action, the utility owes no constitutional process at all, so how much it gave is beside the point. Option 3 overstates the law. Continued utility service can be a property interest when the government provides it. It just never matters here. There are 30-plus more questions on this topic alone, each option explained like that. Five things to take away. 1. State action is the gate. Almost every constitutional right restrains the government only, and the 13th Amendment is the lone exception. 2. A private party becomes the government two ways: an exclusively governmental function or entanglement deep enough to make the choice the state's. 3. Procedural due process runs in two steps. Is a life, liberty, or property interest at stake? And property means entitlement, not hope. 4. If one is, weigh three factors: the private interest, the risk of error, and the value of more safeguards, and the government's burden. 5. The core is notice plus a meaningful hearing before a neutral decision maker, and timing follows the balance. Subsistence benefits get a hearing first, documentary decisions can wait, which is why a leafletter wins on one sidewalk and loses on another, and why a single parent's grant could not be canceled on an anonymous tip. Next time, substantive due process and fundamental rights. Practice this topic with more than 2,900 exam-style questions, free to start, at nextgenbargo.com. This episode is for education and exam preparation only, not legal advice, and we are not affiliated with or endorsed by the NCBE or any bar examining authority.